Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Bucher and Friends podcast. Here is your host.
Let's send it over to Rick Bucher.
Rick Bucher.
Welcome to another episode of Bucher and Friends, subsidiary of the United WeCast Network. I'm Rick Bucher. You can see me on FS1. You can read me on Bleacher Report. Follow me on Twitter at Rick Bucher and on Instagram at Rick_Bucher. I promised you a special guest this week, I am delivering the one, the only, Derrick Rose. You can see him in NBA Arena still. You can see him in a Detroit Pistons uniform.
Yes, sir.
Thanks so much, Derrick, for taking the time. It's great to see you. It's been a while since we've caught up.
I know, man. It's been a while, but, you know, we family, bro. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate that. So, two things. I don't know if you know this about me.
What's up?
One, I have a bit of a sweet tooth.
That's something I didn't know.
All right. Okay, so I can't – I mean, the number of times that I have shut it down without having some kind of dessert, I can probably count on one hand. Now, the other thing is I can't do room service. We're recording this at the Conrad Hotel in Indianapolis. The Pistons are going to play the Pacers here, so I just can't do it. I don't know what it is with my like growing up. I just can't pay that extra 25-35% to get whatever. Right? I can't do it. So it doesn't matter whether I got the money or not.
So
I have to go out. So we're in Indianapolis, and there's a mall right by the hotel.
Yeah.
And there's a convenience store.
On the second level. Yeah, I already know where it's at.
So I already scoped it out when I first got here. And I'm like, that's the spot. That's where I'm going to get my I'm going to get my sweets. So I go in there last night, and I'm walking out, and there's a couple cats walking in, and they're like, oh, that's D. Rose. That's D. Rose. And I look over, and sure enough,
I did not see
dude, you had the hood on, wasn't like, I didn't know how you were going to handle the dudes that wanted to get your attention and all that. And you obviously were going incognito, and I knew I was going to see you today. So I just saw it, and I let it go. But I thought, my man, I saw you were doing the exact same thing I was doing.
Yes, bro. Yeah. Damn, that's crazy that you saw that.
So what's your weakness?
My weakness right now, I would have to say, is chocolate, Oreos.
Okay.
And what else I have? I have like the trolley worms.
Yeah.
Those are my favorite right
That's
now.
Your go-to?
Yeah, that's my go-to right now.
Got you.
Get them in every airport, you know what I'm saying? You get them everywhere. So.
No, I hear you. So that's my little story here from catching up with you in Indy. First of all, just we got to talk a little bit about this, but being back in the Midwest, playing in Detroit, playing again, playing a significant role.
Yes.
How does that feel at this stage?
I mean, I feel like it makes sense to me. You know what I mean? A lot of people didn't understand my decision with coming to Detroit. I mean, that's been my whole life. When I look back, what high school I went to, it wasn't a basketball powerhouse like that. Kind of me and Jabari made it into that.
Right.
Benji, of course, before us, put this on the map with Nick Anderson team. but it wasn't a powerhouse like that, like it is now. I went to Memphis when nobody didn't understand it and nobody didn't see why, but I saw something. And it's the same thing here where, of course, with Arn Tellem being there, I'm just looking for comfort, but I see something with the team that nobody else sees with us being in the East.
Yeah,
we got two great bigs. We got trying to change the culture there in Detroit. It's a gritty city. It's kind of like how I play and what I represent, the struggle. And I could just relate. It's parallel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing you and Blake play together.
Oh, yeah.
That really – just the idea of that. I've had people say they wish it was 5 years ago that we were seeing you guys play together. But still, that idea, I think the basketball IQ of the two of you guys and just the mentality. I had a chance to catch up with Blake last year, and it was kind of the same thing. I thought when he made the move from L.A., I was like, how's he going to feel about Detroit? Because he seemed real L.A. to me, right?
I thought the same thing.
And he said, you know, I spent more time growing up in Oklahoma City than I did in L.A., so this feels actually more familiar to me. I grew up in Cincinnati, so whether I'm in Chicago or I'm in Detroit, like, I have the same – I have that same vibe. Like, I get that. You know, it's just different mentality. You're either comfortable with that grit and the weather and everything or not. And
it throws you off.
So I get that. Load management has suddenly become a big thing again. And I wonder for you, when you hear load management with everything that you've gone through, what do you think when people are looking at, like, Kawhi taking games off and guys being careful? Because that's not what you did when you were in Chicago.
I mean, every situation is different. Every situation is different. Every player is different. Every injury is different. So if you're still dealing with an injury, I totally get it. But I don't think nobody's everybody's in an uproar about it, but I don't think nobody is abusing it. And you don't know what the person is actually going through. You don't know their medical records or what they're going through. So in my case, I felt like I did what's best for my career. Like, if I would have came back sooner, a month sooner, a couple months sooner, a year sooner, there's no way I would have got to year 12.
Right.
If I would have came back sooner. So, and like, to my defense, I feel like I made the right decision. How can you say something about the Kawhi thing when he won a championship off of doing the exact same thing that he did last year? You know what I mean? So it's kind of hard to judge it or like put a finger on it, but I think he's doing what's best for his career. A lot of people was trying to debate whether he is going to make him the best player in the league. He don't care about that. He don't care about that at all. He just want to go hoop. So that's what I respect from him, and especially with him being an introvert. Like, that's what I love from him.
Well, and I look at, like, when you first came in, like, before you had to kind of figure out, I got to do this different. But I mean, like, do you ever look at those first years when you were leading Chicago and say, you know what, if I had – maybe I should have taken a couple days here, or maybe I should have approached this different. I don't know if it's – you couldn't have accomplished what you accomplished if you didn't go that way, or you're thinking, you know, maybe there was a different approach. Because you played with a lot.
I played through
a lot of injuries.
Yeah, I played banged up, but at the same time, like I said, every – situation is different. In Chicago, there's no way I would have been able to do that, because I felt like I was being attacked on an everyday basis, not even about basketball. It was a race part of it too, and a malicious part that was attached to it, where you got grown men coming in. I'm a kid. I'm pulling up in different cars every day. Nonchalant about a lot of things. They probably thought I was a drab or whatever, but no, I just don't have an interest. I'm not interested in what you're interested in. That's what makes us different individuals. That's just who I am. You don't know what I know or what I like or whatever it is. You just don't know me.
Right.
And that's my approach. That was my approach back then. And, like, I just didn't want to let people in. It's just who I – like, you're not my family. You're not my friends. I see what your hidden agenda is, your motive is, and I'm just not dealing with it. Your energy is bad.
Right.
And around that time, when you did see me talk to the media or deal with the media, like, you could just tell I didn't want to be there.
Right.
Because I knew that my answers were short. Why should I elaborate on the answer when I know that you don't like me?
Right.
So why should I give you a real answer?
Right.
No, I'm gonna act like I don't want to be there because I saw the article. I heard about the article that you wrote.
Right.
So that was my approach with the media there. But the low management, yeah, I wish I would have did it some, but back then it just wasn't there.
Yeah.
The term wasn't there.
Well, that was the hard part for me to watch you go through because I knew what you had played through to get the Bulls to the conference finals.
Yeah.
And to make them everything from the beginning, from the first day you came in. So then when you got hurt.
Yes.
And you were like, okay, I got to do this a different way because I can't get to the finish line.
Yeah.
Doing it this way. People questioned your character. They questioned your love for the game.
Yes.
And I'm like, did you not watch the previous 3-4 years? Like, what the man did?
That, yeah.
And I don't know how you – I mean, you walked through it. You were stoic, and you just stuck to your guns because I've seen other guys, Dwight Howard in L.A., when he had the back surgery.
Yes.
He shouldn't have been playing with the Lakers right away.
Mm.
But he felt like – he felt the pressure,
yeah,
and he gave into it, and I don't know that his body was ever the same.
I hear you.
And so the most impressive thing was that you had all those people raining all that hate down on you.
Yes.
And you stuck to your guns. What was that like from the inside?
Like I said, I grew up in a city where the red line system, where they separate you, segregation there, they separate you right from the beginning with housing, how you live, and everything. Of course, when I was younger, I didn't understand that, but the older I got and the more knowledge that I got, I understood, like, man, I see why the Hispanics live over here, the blacks live over here, the whites live in these certain areas. When I was younger, I just knew I couldn't walk in them areas, or if I did, I was going to get a bad vibe, or I was going to get attention that I didn't need at the time.
Hmm.
So when I got older, I realized that. So it just comes with just living in Chicago. So when I got older, when you say that the hate, where the hate came from, I feel like that's what I said about the race. Like, it really played a part. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
Like, they looked at me a certain way. I didn't act a certain way that they wanted me to act. I wasn't open. I wasn't vulnerable,
right,
like the way that they wanted me to be. And I stood on my principles. That's one of the dictums that I did stand on, was being myself.
Hmm.
Like, I didn't want to change for no one, and I didn't want to, like, have my family look at me a certain way. Like, man, who are you? Like, what's going on? Why
right.
are you acting a certain way? I
right.
didn't want that. And like, I represent the struggle. Like, I know what I represent. So I didn't want to seem like I was folding at the time.
Yeah. I feel as if that's paid off for you in the long run, because the people who believed in you because of where you came from and who you are have stuck with you. Like, that love is still there. And
yeah.
the players in the league, like when you got the 50 in Minnesota and
yeah.
that you're playing now, like I see and hear the love of guys who have always recognized who you are. And so it's like there's a lot of people that jumped off the Derrick Rose bandwagon.
Yes.
But I think those that it was never about being on or off.
Yes.
That even means more to them now, mm-hmm. that you stuck to your guns. And
that's
I don't know
so.
If you – I mean, do you feel that? Do you get that sense? Do you get any gratification from knowing that?
Of course. Like I said, it's all about just representing some. Everybody go through some. Everybody struggle. It's about how you react to it.
Hmm.
It's all about your reactions. Are you going to hide in the shell, or are you going to be vulnerable enough to say, you know what, I wasn't mature enough at that time. And I'm a totally different person. So when I tell my story, I want to be able to express it in the way that I want to.
Hmm.
And I feel like that's what I did.
When I see Zion Williamson play
yeah.
and some of the issues that he's had,
yes.
I think about how explosive he plays.
Yes.
And I think about how you played and how explosive you were. Now, he's obviously bigger and heavier, but I wonder – do you look at him and think, first of all, have you changed your game? Have you adjusted and said, hey, for me to get through like a season, I can't just attack
yeah.
and do everything that I was doing before?
Yeah, and I think the the biggest blessing I ever had was like going to New York. Like going to New York, I figured out a way to be the third option and play a totally different way of playing how I normally played. Like in New York, it showed me that I didn't have to be the first or second option. I knew that I figure out a way to affect the game by being the third, playing through KP, playing through Melo. I was still like averaging 16 to 17 there, and like it went under the radar, but I felt like I was playing well since New York, and I think that it helped me play with a little bit more poise. It helped me figure out to be more efficient while I was on the floor. And it just helped me over my overall game with just understanding the game, time management, and finding out ways to affect the game by not only just scoring.
Yeah. So I heard a story while you were in New York about you guys would be running your stuff with, I think Hornacek was the coach, right?
Yeah.
A lot of pick and roll.
Yeah.
You were feeling good,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then Phil would walk in. Everybody kind of have to go into the triangle, right?
Triangle,
to,
yeah.
And everybody's just like, oh, okay, let's run the triangle.
Yeah.
How challenging was it? Because I felt like when you guys were able to play the way you wanted to play and utilize what you had, you could just see the energy, like, and it worked, right?
Yes.
And I never saw you as a triangle type.
Same.
Point guard, right?
Same.
So, how challenging was that to know what you could do, and yet this feeling like you had to do it another way because of who was running the show?
It was very challenging because when you first come in, you don't know what to expect. So, it will be games where I remember we played Boston. We had a big win in Boston. And we came in the next day and feel like kind of like shitted on us. Like, man, that was a terrible win. I didn't like the entire, like, I didn't like the game. I didn't like the style of play that we played the entire game. And it's like, damn, like, I've been to locker rooms before where, like, you had terrible games, but somehow you found out how to, like get that, like, win a game. And
yeah.
It's like, hey, guys, woo, however you bring it in, like, man.
Right.
Hey.
We stole
tough
one.
Tough one. We stole one tonight, though. You know what I mean?
Right.
So he kind of, like, did that a couple of games, and it's like, damn, like, this triangle style of way of playing is, like, it's old.
Yeah.
Like, guys now are shooting, like, 53s a game. Nobody's not doing that anymore.
Right. Right.
Then they were trying to make me shoot more three. It was just a lot going. It was a very complex situation.
Yeah.
And I talked to BJ a lot about it and just tried to get a better feel for Phil and like Mello.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Me, Melo, and KP, everybody was on the same page, but it was really just feel like just manhandling the team.
Yeah. I for those who don't know, BJ Armstrong, your agent.
Yes.
Who played for Phil, won three championships with him, and knows the triangle intimately. So how was he able to kind of guide you through dealing with Phil and dealing with that? Because
with trying to talk to him, I had like conversations with Phil, asking him what he wanted me to do, and the only thing that he was talking about was the triangle. Still, and it's like, man, like I'm talking to a wall right now. Yeah. And I had to understand when you're older, you get more stubborn.
Yeah.
So his age, I think, played the part.
Yeah.
And, you know, throughout that whole situation, I felt like I had a lot on my plate and I didn't grab the opportunity the way that I was supposed to.
Hmm.
Like, I was supposed to fight with Phil. I was supposed to fight with Melo. With making Melo play a different way and forcing him to play a different way. And that's something that I didn't do because I had a lot on my plate at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I'll come in, like, you want me to come in, fight with him, like express my way in a different way with Melo, with a different approach. Like, it was just a lot to deal with.
Sure.
When that's what made me leave New York. I had a lot on my plate at the time, trying to figure out who I was as a man, how I was going to stay in the league. They wanted me to shoot a certain amount of threes a game, where it's like, man, I shoot 12 shots now. If I shoot 4 threes, that's 8 shots. You know how efficient I got to be?
Right.
And it was my contract year. So it was like, man, what y'all trying to put me in a trick bag or something? Right. Like, I didn't understand it.
Right.
So that's one of the reasons why I came here. Like I said, if I ever get the opportunity again, like I'm doing whatever it takes to grab it. You know what I mean?
No.
And it's whatever it is. If I see it, if I see a window or whatever, I'm breaking through.
Hmm.
And that's one of the reasons why I came here.
Hmm. What was harder, not playing because you were injured or not playing because nobody was signing you?
That's a good question. I will have to say not playing when I was injured.
Okay.
Because all you heard was people saying that, you know how it is, where you can't depend on him.
Right.
Or he's injury prone. Like, that's all that you heard. When I wasn't signed, that's the crazy thing about it. I had so much clarity at that time. Like, when I wasn't signed, I was I think we were in Cleveland. I was going up to Cleveland State every day with my guy Art, and we were just working out. But what I remember when I was younger was the 5 P's: proper preparation prevents poor performance.
Hmm.
And I just remember that being in high school, and our coaches and my AAU coaches used to always tell me that. And I was always, like, preparing myself for something. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know if I was going to get another scratch or knock on the door. Like, I just knew that I was prepping myself for something. And the opportunity came where Tibbs ended up being in Minnesota. He brought me in. Like, I was playing the 3-guard mm-hmm. when I came in. And I said, from now on, like, just be a professional about whatever situation I'm in.
Yeah. It was wild for me to not see you in the league. Like, I'm thinking, nobody's got a spot for a former MVP. And what I couldn't figure out is, like, some guys, you know, they get a rep. And no matter if they can play or they can't play, I think Melo's going through that a little bit right now.
Yes.
You can at least say, okay, team's got this kind of view on the cat. So it's not a matter he can't play. They just have this opinion of him. But I never understood why anybody would have a negative view of you based on Tibbs, based on your teammates. Like, nobody ever said you were, like, it was the opposite. Guys loved playing with you. They respected you. Did you – what was your thinking as to why you couldn't find a spot?
It has something – that's what I mean, maturing. It has something to do with me for sure. Like, I left New York. I didn't tell anyone.
Mm.
And I'm man enough to take on the responsibility, the blame, or whatever you want to call it. I'm mad enough to take that on, like, full, like, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
I'm willing to take
it. You're
on.
Accepting it.
I'm accepting it, whatever.
Yeah.
But I left New York. I didn't tell nobody. When I was in Cleveland, I left. And when I left New York, I went home to my family. Like, I was telling them that, like, man, it might be over. And we had, like, a huge discussion about it. And I went back to New York. So when I was in Cleveland, I had got an injury, I think, during the Milwaukee game. And, like, I didn't know at the time it was my fascia. Like, fascia is, like, what, like, binds. It's the layer under your skin that binds all your muscles together.
Okay.
So think of a hot dog. The intestine of a hot dog, like the skin of a
yeah,
hot dog.
Yeah.
Like, people, it's thin, but you got to know what it is.
Yeah.
So, the lady Judy Seto, when
that's what was bothering you.
That was what was bothering me. The lady Judy Seto, when I went out to LA, she was explaining it to me, like, the history of it. It came from overseas, came over here, told me about the museum I should go to, the body museum out there with the cadavers. Like, told me about the museum. I went and checked out the museum. And she was basically, like, being my therapist, like, while I was there, while I was getting treatment. And
now, what point was this? Where were you?
This was when I left Cleveland, like, when I was when I came back from Cleveland. I mean, came back from Mexico, because when I left in Cleveland, I didn't tell nobody that I was leaving. I didn't even tell my family. It was me and my girl, and we just left because I felt like my family wasn't hearing me when I went home in New York. So, like, I'm like, fuck it. I'm not telling nobody. I'm getting a bag. I didn't even tell my friend Art. He was living with us at the time. He just saw me and Elena just getting in the car, and we off. Like, we flew to San Fran. Went from, I mean, regular flights, too, not private flights.
Right.
Went from San Fran to New Mexico. Everybody's calling my phone, and I'm telling, like, man, it's done. I'm done. Like, y'all didn't want to hear me out the first time.
Huh.
Like, I'm done. Like, don't, like, this is what it is. Like, I'm... And I was there for a couple of days, and I ended up talking.
This was Mexico?
New Mexico. Yeah, New Mexico.
New Mexico, okay.
Yeah. No, Mexico. Mexico.
New Mexico, bad, okay. Yeah.
So we were there for a couple of days. I ended up talking to BJ again, like, after a few days, because I was there for, like, 5 to 6 days. And I ended up talking to Kobe from Cleveland, the GM, and I ended up flying back.
Kobe
and,
Altman.
Yeah, and... he was telling me, like, man, just keep getting treatment, and over time, like you come back whenever you're ready. And during that time, like, doing a lot of reading and just understanding that how important your mental was subconsciously, it was hurting me more, because you go in for treatment, you thinking all these bad thoughts, your vibrations are low.
Yeah.
So you're hearing everything, your vibration's low. And that's when I started reading more, and I started to understand how strong, like, your mental has to be. And I had to, like, change how my mentality and just how I thought about certain things. And sure enough, I ended up getting through it.
I would have never thought that I'd hear Derrick Rose sound like a New Age disciple. Like, next thing, you're going to be breaking out crystals. And
I'm almost there. I'm almost there, bro.
No, but I think that's what was amazing to me, because I don't think people recognize how mental stress can affect you physically.
Man, bro, it does. I swear, right when I changed my mental, everything started to, like, change for me. Like, the universe was working for me in a way where along with me reading more. So, I just got more clarity out of it, and, like, everything's just started to work in my favor.
Hmm. You, so when we first got to know each other, and I remember you coming in, and you were gung-ho about, and it was one of the things that I admired, is, like, you weren't afraid of the Michael Jordan legacy. You were like, I want to get the Bulls back to where they were when Michael was here.
Yes.
I want to take that on. I'm willing to put that, you know, take that challenge. What's the challenge for you now? Like, how have you reset what playing means to you and what you want to accomplish?
You know, I had to put all those accolades in the past and just start over with a fresh start. Like, I know that I won't be the last Derrick Rose. You know what I mean? With, like, having all the injuries and whatever. So I could be the example for the next guy that's going through something.
Hmm.
Or the next player, or the next kid that's in high school having something like ACL injury. Like, I could be the example for them.
Hmm.
Like, if I could get through it, like, I believe anybody can get through it. But I show mine's different. I lead by example. Like, that's the most you probably ever heard me talk. So,
sure.
you know what I mean? So I just wanted to – like, I led in a different way. Like, you got your Kobe-type leaders, and you got your Tim Duncan-type leaders.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more of Tim, where I come in early. I'm a professional about everything. And now, later on in my career, like, I'm being more vocal now, because outside of basketball, I want to make that transition to being a businessman.
Sure.
And being able to talk in front of people, man, talking in front of hundreds of people in a conference room and not be nervous. So in the locker room, that's when I test out my skills. You know what I mean?
There you go. It's like, all practice.
And you're helping. Like, if I see something that's detrimental to the team, I'm gonna call you out on it.
Hmm.
If I see something, because at the end of the day, it's all for the betterment of the team.
Sure.
So if I see it, I'm gonna say something about it, and that's that.
Whose example did you use in trying to get through what you went through?
Nobody's, man.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I don't know that anybody's flown as high as you have, being a league MVP, deal with the injuries that you dealt with, and then having to kind of fight your way back into the league. I mean, it's actually pretty amazing that
you
were on the outside looking in the way you were, and now I see you with Detroit, and you're closing games again, and, like, it's been a long journey, but
it
feels like you made it back.
Man, thanks for saying that, man. I never really, like, looked at the individual or player like that. I always looked at, like leaders, like someone that's not even in my profession, you know what I mean? Like other individuals, like Martin Luther King, like Malcolm X. I mean, it's other people I can't even think of right now, but I always just tried to remain myself and understand that, like, I was put here for a reason, because a lot of, like, the thing in New York, like I said, I put myself in those situations where I left and I had the rape case. So I had to think about, like, what can I do to better myself as a person so that, like, I know I'm with everything, like, how I grew up. I mean, just my story, period. Like, I want to stay under the radar, but just being who I am, like, it seemed like my stories always get, like this crazy, like, you know what I mean, response.
Yeah.
No matter what I do, you get a crazy response. So I'm like, all right, it's going to get a crazy response, but it's not going to be because of no rape shit.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's
going
to be for the up and up. I want people to look at me as, like, a stand-up individual.
Right.
Like, I want that in the past. I want people to see money when they see me. I want them to just see I'm a stand-up individual that cares about just what's going on culturally. I'm not saying, like, only in the black culture, just culturally with everyone. Like, I understand. I'm just here to help and just add to society.
Well, I think one of the tough things was that because you didn't trust the media, when something would come out, there was never your side of the story. So people would run with it whatever direction they were going to run with. And I think that there was probably people who thought, even people that were in your corner, they were thinking, man, if they had it really wrong, Derek would say something.
Yeah.
And you never did.
Yeah, I never did.
And so it kind of allowed those things to have a life of their own out there.
I hear you.
And that, I think that ultimately worked against you. And those of us who knew you and were like, that ain't him, or until I hear it from Derek, I'm not believing that.
Yeah.
Most people were like, well, he's not saying anything, so it must be true. And I think that, I honestly think that hurt you in the big picture. Not to say you should have done it any different, but I think that's why it, like, some of these stories about you grew as big as they did.
No, that's, you're totally right about that, but it's just not me. It's just not good, bad, ugly. I'm not going to run and say something right away or put myself, like, on the social media and just try to, like, express my way where everybody, that's just not me.
Sure.
I tend to stay in the back and people, I mean, I just let it be, you know what I mean?
So how much longer, how much longer you want to play? What do you want to do? What do you want to get out of the game?
First off, I want to get a championship. I think that's the only thing that I'm missing on my resume. And I just want to end it the right way. Like when the kid, because let's be for real, 20, 30 years from now, nobody's not going to, like, be talking about me like that. But the kid that's a student of the game, whenever they stumble on my story, I want them to see that, like, man, like, dude been through a lot. And, I just want them to feel it instead of just, you know what I mean, instead of just people just talking about it. Because there's nothing wrong with that either. But the kid that stumbled on my story, I just want them to feel it and understand where I came from.
Yeah. Fair enough. We'll end it there. There's plenty more I could get into with you,
sure.
But we'll save that. We'll do another podcast down the line.
Whenever.
I appreciate that. This has been Bucher and Friends with Derek Rose. If you appreciate the podcast, wherever you get your podcast, iTunes or wherever, leave us a review. And if if you send a screenshot of that review, just the stars, whatever you give us, whatever you want to give us is fine. Send it to @BucherFriends and you'll be eligible to win a prize, which is either going to be, I'm going to make it a package deal. You can have your choice. You can either have the book that I wrote with Yao Ming, or you can have the new Derek Rose book that is out to find out the real from our man Derek Rose. As always, it's been a pleasure.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.